Welcome to the inaugural episode of the Rigs Podcast. I'm your host, Sonam Yangdin. The Rigs Podcast is a humble tribute to mark the dauntless 48th birth anniversary of His Majesty the King for his magnanimity and exemplary leadership. At a time when the resolve, audacity, and acumen of leaders around the world are being tested by the raging COVID-19 pandemic, His Majesty, through present actions and unflinching courage, has led the way in articulating a great sense of community and solidarity. Bhutan indeed is blessed to be able to witness a collective political and societal response during such unprecedented times. The Rigs Podcast is a forum for knowledge sharing and intellectual discourse with the luminaries of leadership, governance, democracy, and public policy, among others. The contents will be curated to provide a deep dive into the minds that are making a difference, locally and globally. Well, for the inaugural episode, we have a very special guest, someone who really needs no introduction. And the special guest is none other than His Excellency Dr. Lotte Sring, the Honorable Prime Minister of Bhutan. His Excellency, as we all know, besides being the Prime Minister, is also a medical doctor and a highly acclaimed surgeon who is very much a household name across the country. His Excellency is a recipient of the Druk Thukse Medal, one of Bhutan's highest civilian awards from His Majesty the King in 2017. The medal was awarded for his extraordinary services to the nation as a medical professional. On the personal front, His Excellency enjoys biking, reading and cooking, and of course, listening to podcast. Your Excellency, welcome to the Rigs Podcast. It's such an honor to have you.
Thank you, Sonam, and thank you, Rigs, for coming up with this timely and relevant initiative.
Thank you, Your Excellency. Our pleasure. The topic for this episode is governing amidst a global crisis. So why governing amidst a global crisis? Well, the government campaigned and won the elections with the overarching goal of narrowing the gap, essentially to address inequality. But Bhutan has not been an exception to the effects of the pandemic that has led to socio-economic disruptions. In this regard, measures to mitigate the immediate impacts of the pandemic, while at the same time formulating long-term cushion plans, remain both a priority and a challenge. So in this regard, Your Excellency, my first question is, how does the government plan to navigate through the socio-economic challenges posed by the pandemic, while at the same time striving to achieve the goal of narrowing the gap?
To get on to this answer straight, I think narrowing the gap should be on everyone's mind, be it at governance level or even at individual level. To relate the two, that is DNT's political pledge of narrowing the gap, but narrowing the gap through the COVID crisis doesn't really sound appropriate, Sashuni Veel. Now, keeping narrowing the gap in mind, we have to study and assess the COVID situations, be it in Bhutan or globally, very closely. What we have found out, what is very obvious, is COVID has actually affected every individual in the world, every agency, every country in the world. But most affected or disproportionately affected are the poorer countries, are the weaker sections of our society. And many, as you know, are losing their jobs. And for them to get back the same job would be even more difficult, if not impossible. So considering all this situation and scenario now, I think we need to redefine this narrowing the gap in the language of COVID-19 or the pandemic. I would say more important than narrowing the gap, it is more important now to avoid widening the gap. Because if you are not careful, this is going to widen the gap a lot. Some sections of a society can get very rich taking advantage of the COVID-19. And weaker sections of the society, the poorer countries, more least developed countries can be terribly left behind. So our focus now is to avoid widening the gap. And we have taken lots of measures, as you being at RICS will be aware of it. So our primary focus is, while keeping narrowing the gap in mind, our primary focus, as I said, is to avoid widening the gap. avoid wealth being amassed by or in the hands of the Habs. So we are being very careful with this issue, but a very good question. Thank you.
Thank you. So in that sense, can the nation rest its hope on the 21st century economic roadmap, among other initiatives of the government, of course, to not allow widening of such gaps and to steer the country from a major downturn towards a more equitable, sustainable and resilient future? What major transformations can Bhutan look forward to with the launch of the 21st century economic roadmap?
Thank you. Thank you, Sonam, again. Your question on 21st century economic roadmap, is relevant. We need to talk about it, but to bring it to the context of COVID-19 and the global pandemic, we had to rethink this. As we all know, 21st century economic roadmap, in the same words, was actually pronounced by His Majesty the King during 2019 National Day celebration. And from there, we formed all relevant stakeholders, task forces, and we had been working very excitedly on this. But suddenly, in between, by March, COVID-19 came in, and everything had to be changed. Everything had to be reset, as you know. So, 21st century economic roadmap with COVID-19 needs to be relooked. But at the same time, Bhutan will go on forever for generations to come. So we have longer objectives that can be achieved in longer time, but we also have to think about present times. When we talk about 21st century economic roadmap, I would like to categorize it into what is immediately required, what is required in COVID-19 norms, as well as we keep very close tag on the components of new normal. So as soon as the COVID-19 clears off, be it through herd immunity or be it through mass immunization, we will have to embark on new normal, which will have lots of newer initiatives, innovative ideas, and those are the main components of 21st century economic roadmap. As of now, when we were talking about 21st century economic roadmap pre-COVID, there was a lot of focus on tourism, for example. Now that whole thing needs to be reset and redefined. So that cannot take its original shape. Then second was on foreign direct investment. That was another component that we wanted to redo it, redefine it, and sell it in a different package. But now with global crisis, you all know that many are not willing to invest much. Trans or across border trading has changed and taking a totally different shape. And for us also nationally, we are not interested to go on with normal FDIs. We'll have to wait and see how the global scenario evolves and then take advantage from the evolving scenario rather than carry on with what has already been planned. So to answer your question straight, yes, we are working on it, but we have to reset it, redefine it, and then study the global scenario very closely so that we want to be ahead of them.
Thank you, Your Excellency. According to the recent media reports, Bhutan is likely to experience negative economic growth in 2020. So what does that mean for the country and the government?
Yes, Sonam, again, thank you. Now, I think every individual, every country is talking about COVID-19. And on this front, as we all know, the present crisis started off as a health crisis. And then soon the focus switched to economy, as we are now facing and as the whole world is facing. Going negative probably is almost normal in this pandemic or the crisis now. So likewise, Bhutan's economy is also tilting below 0 point, which is negative, as you know. But the formal assess is not being done. Globally, it's all gone in negative. And ours also, after one national lockdown, is projected to have gone up to -6. And now is springing back towards normality, as we all know. So my focus is not on the negative economy or how soon can we evolve out of it. My focus or attention would be, as we go down or up, how should we transform ourselves? How should we change the way we do business within the country as well as outside? Trading, as we all know, mostly is with India. But most of this is also been very, very informal. So So how should we formalize those? And then even within the country, we needed to redefine our needs and wants. We needed to redefine our capacities, capacities of the individuals, our experts, our institutional capacity, and then, of course, at a broader aspect, national capacity. So on this front, for now, in order to slow down the slowing economy and in order to prepare for our economy to spring back to normalcy as soon as possible, what one would call it the V curve, we have devised four priority sectors. One would be immediately employment generation. One would be to discourage too much of imports. One would be to encourage import substitution. And then finally would be to embark faster on the post-COVID norms. We would like to encourage more innovation, mainly digital driven innovations. So these are the four primary focus that we have given. And then if you pay a lot of attention to this, if you can manage these four factors, employment, export encouragement, import discouraging, and innovation mainly riding on to ICT. If you can professionalize these four factors, probably we will have real good post-COVID or new normal situation. So I, as of now, I'm not too worried about GDP going negative, because as we all know, we do not pay a lot of focus on GDP. We are a GNH country, Gross National Happiness country. You know the fallacies of GDP. GDP do not account to one's wealth, country's wealth, or country's economic problems inclusively. So as we are mindful about the numbers, deep down, we are worried about the well-being of our population, which is the primary focus and attention from His Majesty the King. Well-being does not directly translate to GDP in terms of economy. So that way, maybe at a better time, when we have some more time, I would like to elaborate. I would like to give you the actual personal feeling on what attention should we be giving towards GDP versus GNH. I think this pandemic has given us a golden opportunity to prove to the whole world that GNH-focused developmental plan is far better than GDP-based developmental plans.
Thus, thank you, Your Excellency. The priority sectors sound optimistic indeed, La. And for one, we know that the government is fairly comfortable with the capital budget. But we have an economy that is badly affected by the pandemic that continues to impact our revenue generation. At the same time, the government is incurring heavy expenditure to finance COVID-19 related measures, among other initiatives that are in the pipeline, as highlighted by Your Excellency. So in such a paradoxical situation, how are we placed in terms of our finances? And what fiscal interventions will the government adopt to meet the recurrent expenditure?
Last, Sunam, your present question on budgeting system and how should we finance our developmental activities versus your second question on economy probably is linked to each other. And on budgeting system, one must be clear on the way we allocate our resources. We have two clear distinct compartments, one compartment being the recurrent budget and the other one being the capital budget. On recurrent budget, we have a very wise and visionary provisions in the constitution, which clearly says that our recurrent budget must be met from domestic revenue. So that could be a little challenge, because domestic revenue has gone down significantly, and then recurrent budget remaining the same, probably to match the two would be a little difficult, as you all can see. But through the years, decades of development, we have actually come to a very comfortable stage whereby even up to 20-30% of the capital budget is also being covered by domestic revenue. But now the domestic revenue being going down or shrinking, it will be not very easy to cover the recurrent costs required. But on the capital side, we have absolutely no worries, because capital activities are being funded by external source, be it on grant or loan. And that is still there, that is constant, and that has also gone up a little bit. We are able to get mobilize more grants. We have more access to loans. So developmental activities on the capital side is absolutely not a problem. Now, on the recurrent side, in order to meet the recurrent requirement from domestic revenue, we are trying to capitalize most of the recurrent activities and put it on this side of the compartment so that the need on recurrent budget remains lower and will be able to meet as required by the constitution from domestic revenue. On the budgeting side, I mean, this is the technical requirement. So in a nutshell, developmental activities is not a problem. And our main problem now is being, are we able to spend all the budgeted activities or not? All the activities that are identified fund source, mainly because of COVID norms, we're having a serious problem in implementing those activities. So shortage of budget is not a problem here.
Lars, thank you, Your Excellency. That's reassuring to know. So my next question is in regards to Bhutan's graduation from the least developed countries category. As reported, Bhutan has proposed to graduate in 2023. But from what can be perceived, major challenges now lie in saving the EVI, the Economic Vulnerability Index, from dramatically dropping low, given that most of the indicators of EVI have been affected by the pandemic. So how can we ensure that Bhutan graduates on a sure footing to minimize the risks of backsliding from the LDC category? And this question is also in relation to the entrance request at the 75th session of the UNGA, where Your Excellency requested for a reset in format for both SDGs and development path for a smooth transition from the LDC. So what is the government's take on Bhutan's overall graduation from an LDC by 2023?
Sonam, you're right. Graduation from LDC had always been a focus, especially in the languages of the UN. We had always been dwelling on that. And a lot of activities for this ongoing plan, that is a 12th plan, is also geared and built as a plan that will help us graduate from LDC group by 2023. But while designing this graduation, as we all know, COVID-19 was not in the picture. We did not consider that. Now with COVID-19 and its effect on health, well-being, mental, psychosocial issues, and biggest being on the economy. Yes, we qualified twice, but both the conditions, we could not qualify to meet the economic standard requirements. Bhutan still remains economically vulnerable. So that part being a constant factor, and now our economy, like elsewhere in the world, is badly affected. I really don't know how UN will assess this. That's why in my recent UNGA address also, I mentioned or informed the agencies that this graduation process also needs to be relooked in line with COVID-19 impact. So let's see what the UN and the concerned agencies advise us. For us, we will be happy either way. But of course, as we all know, as LDC, or least developed country, the access to finance and access to financing developmental activities is little less stringent, I would say, as a LDC group. Once we graduate, those conditions become little stringent, and our access to aid and grant becomes a little tougher. But yet, that doesn't mean we cannot progress as a country. So let's see what the UN has to say on this.
Lars, thank you. One of the disguised messages the pandemic exuded with its rage was the need for global solidarity, with a focus on the importance of good bilateral and multilateral relations among the countries. So what is your take on this, Your Excellency?
Yes, Sonam, again, another pertinent topic. On multilateralism, of course, there used to be a lot of talks and debates on it, but during this present crisis, during the pandemic, I'm hearing more people talking, maybe not too much in favor of multilateralism, solely based on geopolitical situations of few countries, maybe a strong opinion from few global leaders. But to me, I personally feel there is no choice. In fact, the pandemic has reinforced our need to be working together. Especially, the pandemic has taught us a very good lesson that we are all dependent on each other. So I think with more digitalization, with more ICTization, our world actually is shrinking in virtual size, and we are becoming more and more dependent. Ease of doing things are becoming easier and easier for us, mainly because we had been working very closely together. That is in short at a geopolitical level. But all this actually stem from our personal needs, the way we all as individuals function on daily basis. As we all become more and more dependent, as we all know that one cannot survive without being dependent on others, I think no single nation in the world can survive on his or her own. To me, to answer your question straight, multilateralism is the way forward for every one of us, all the countries in the world, big, small, rich, poor. I really don't bother about that. I don't care about that. But we are all dependent on each other. And I think working very closely and harmoniously together should be the way forward for all of us.
Lars, thank you, La. So my next question might require some solemn reflections, La. Despite being a small resource-constrained country, Bhutan's overall response to the pandemic has been lauded in global forums. So what, Your Excellency, is your assessment of our response to the pandemic thus far?
I think the question is not about smallness, and I think the question is not about not having enough resources. The main crucial point in fighting this outbreak or the pandemic is how united you are. How wisely and how best have you invested in your social sectors? And these are the two key factors here. And I would like to fully agree with you that we are doing very well in terms of fight against the pandemic, mainly because, as you all know, all Bhutanese, all the systems here, we are all unconditionally united as one team under His Majesty's leadership. And His Majesty himself, leaving no stones unturned, is taking all the, I would say, stress and the worries, and making everything absolutely sure that we actually win and come out very clean on this. Many Bhutanese may not have realized, but our monarchs have consistently paid a lot of attention on our social sectors, especially health and education, both being absolutely free in the country and both being kept at very good level in terms of quality. So I think that has helped us a lot, because Bhutanese people are well educated, easy to converse and communicate. At the same time, our health infrastructure had been well established throughout the country, that when pandemic actually hit us, we did not have to do much to actually come up with the measures from health point of view, because our infrastructures are already laid, and health access to health being totally free, that gave us the biggest advantage. For us, the Bhutanese in Bhutan, our only worry was to keep away from the virus. One need not worry about not being able to afford your treatment. Even at regular times, we had been very fortunate. But at times of pandemic or global health crisis like this, I think Bhutanese are very, very fortunate to have unconditional access to healthcare services. When we talk about social security, most of our savings or expenditure would be on health and education. That being totally free in the country, we need not worry. Whatever the system cannot take care of, whoever falls in the crack of our systems, His Majesty's KIDU program comes in very effectively. Like this time, His Majesty's Resilient Fund is taking care of the unemployed, taken care of people who have lost their jobs, who have come back from other countries. And His Majesty's Relief Fund has actually gone to the extent of taking care of paying interest on all our loans, which is unprecedented and which has not happened in other parts of the world. So that's why we consider ourselves very fortunate to have this assured social support system in the country.
Lars, thank you, La, Your Excellency. So my next question, La. What lessons can Bhutan draw from the pandemic that will prove crucial in formulating and executing plans and policies as we pledge to build back better? How can we leverage such lessons to our advantage going forward?
To answer your question a little differently, or from a little different lens, I personally feel that to contain this pandemic or to fight this pandemic very effectively, we all must be united unconditionally. And we must have a very strong, far-sighted, and benevolent leadership. Any system with the combination of these two will come out successful from this pandemic. And if you have realized, we have these two conditions well set in our country. All of us are unconditionally united under His Majesty's leadership. And His Majesty, as we all know, so benevolently taking care of our needs and livelihood. So I think that, I would say, is a unique take-home message from this fight. So after that, rest of the lessons we can draw from this, I would say, are very conventional. That is being talked about and taken care of by all other countries in the world. Like, let's say, in terms of economy, we must be absolutely sure of the needs and wants after the pandemic. We must be able to redirect our economy. We should be able to prepare and skill our youth according to the evolving job nature. So those are, I would say, pretty conventional ones that we can elaborate at a different time.
Thus, thank you, Your Excellency. Perhaps this is my final question. Governing amidst a global crisis. So as a Prime Minister and a highly acclaimed medical doctor, governing the country during such global crisis, if you could kindly share with us your experience, both as a Prime Minister and a doctor.
Thank you, Salam. I think I would not like to spend too much time on this question because it looks like that is too personal. But for me, wherever I go, I had always been consistent with the principles that I follow in my life. Whatever I decide to do, I always ask myself these three basic questions of if what I'm doing is good or not, if what I'm doing is right or not, if what I'm going to do will have positive impact on myself, my family, or in the society or not. So these three basic things we all must be very sure of before we actually embark on anything. Whether it's good or not, if it is good, is that correct or not? If it is good and correct, how much impact will it have on society, on our society, or on one's life? So once you follow this very strictly, it's very, very difficult for one to go wrong. So based on that, when I govern, I think the whole governance principle, the decisions that we take, revolves around these three basic questions. So I would leave it there. Of course, as a surgeon, we are trained to be surgeons. And as a medical doctor, I have taken the Hippocratic oath to do no harm. So I cannot do any harm here. And if now in the COVID-19 or pandemic language, one word that has been very, very commonly used by everyone is SOP. Everyone knows about SOP. Everyone is asking for SOP. Actually, I come from a professional world where SOP has to be followed on daily basis. Standard operating procedure is our mantra as a surgeon. So it becomes very easy for me to guide SOPs. It becomes very easy for me to develop SOPs. And it becomes very disappointing when people do not follow SOPs. So that is the take that I have on this. So with this, thank you, Sonam. Thank you, Rix. I know it's no time to pat our backs yet. The fight is still going on very strong. Pandemics is getting stronger and stronger. As you know, wave number 2 is coming. We don't know what will trigger wave number 3. We don't know when will SARS-CoV-3 hit us. There are more questions than answers to all this. So we cannot lay our guards down. We must keep fighting. But still then, I would like to thank you and Rix for coming up with this initiative. I would like to thank the people of Bhutan for giving us unconditional support and for bringing about the social change that we all need. I can see the changes taking place. And of course, we all must thank His Majesty the King for unconditional care that we are receiving. And with this, I again would like to repeat that we as Bhutanese are very, very fortunate to be born in Bhutan and in this era. So thank you very much.
Thus, thank you very much, Your Excellency. With this, we come to the end of our conversation. We would like to once again thank Your Excellency for sparing your valuable time to be with us. It has been a great honor and a privilege, Your Excellency. Thank you. Thank you, listeners, for joining us. Please stay tuned for the next episode with the Indian Ambassador to Bhutan, Her Excellency Ruchira Kamboj on the topic, Perspectives on Women Leadership in the 21st Century. Until then, please take care, practice hand washing, wear your face masks, maintain physical distancing and avoid crowded places as far as possible. Have a good time.